Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Cale Teeter and Sujeet Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information about our show, please see our website at azpodcast.azurewebsites.net. Well, welcome back to the podcast, to the Azure podcast, that is. This is episode number 3. As always, my name is Sujeet DeMello. I am a senior consultant with Microsoft, focused in the app dev space, based out of New Jersey. On Skype, I have my esteemed colleague, Cale Teeter.
Thanks, Sujeet. Good to be back for episode 3 of the AZ podcast.
Right. Indeed it is. Now, Cale, as you know, today is Halloween here in the United States. So for you and for all of our U.S. Listeners, I'd like to wish them a happy Halloween. And in the theme of Halloween, you know, I'd like to cover a topic that it doesn't scare our listeners too much, you know. And I think the topic that, you know, you can think of the topic that I'm going to talk about, it's Azure Websites. Because I believe Azure Websites is one of those features of Windows Azure that almost anybody can take advantage of. You don't have to be a developer. You don't have to be even strongly technically minded. Anybody that needs a website of various types can leverage Azure Websites. So what exactly are the websites? They're essentially ASP.NET or Node.js or PHP style websites that can be scaled very highly in the cloud environment. You can start from something that's small and free. And then as your traffic grows, you can move on to a more shared and even a dedicated model. And as a matter of fact, you could get up and running with an Azure website in just a few seconds. It's really easy. You just walk up to your Azure portal, you choose the Create menu, then Websites, and then you say Quick Create. You can choose from a gallery of pre-created websites for you based on popular frameworks and content management systems such as .NET Nuke, the Blog Engine, Orchard, Drupal, etc. Now, Cale, why is it that we're so excited about Azure websites? What makes them so important?
Yeah, thanks, Sujeet. You know, one of the big things with approaching something like building a website that's going to be global, that's going to be exposed to the internet, is how do I get this thing running? And as you mentioned, you know, only a few seconds we can spin one of these things up and have a functioning website. So they're quite open, and they can appeal to a number of customers. As you mentioned, the programming skills and all the types of deployment things, you don't have to be into the most advanced ways that we do that in order to use these things. So it's a great way for a startup or even someone just starting up a new site can get one running up quickly and then later modify the code. So it hits it hits numbers of price points that we're going to describe later. So as you mentioned before, you know, we start out free and then we can go up to a dedicated model where there is some cost involved. Obviously, you're going to get better scalability and more features with it. So Sujeet, I understand there's a few ways to get started and actually deploy these things, and we'll just see if you could
elaborate on that. Sure, indeed. Yeah, Cale, so there's basically three kinds of websites you can create with Windows Azure, or three ways to create the websites, let's put it that way. The first one is the Quick Create option. This creates relatively simple websites that have no database, okay, primarily for content and things like that. The second type is created from a gallery. It presents you a lot of options over there, and there are two kinds of websites listed over there. One of them is programmable, the other one's non-programmable. Programmable websites are ones that, you know, ASP.MVC, maybe Node.js or Ruby or PHP. Those are websites where they give you a starter website up there, which is fully configured with a little database, and then you can download that to your computer and further configure it with Visual Studio, Eclipse, or any other tool that you can use. Of course, there's a non-programmable kind of website, which would appeal to most people, because you really don't need to know any programming for that.
Essentially, it's used in primarily in content management systems. Log in with an admin ID onto the website, and you can configure it exactly the way you want. And once you're happy, you just publish it, and it's immediately live to your users exactly the way you set it up. The azpodcast.com, which is the website we use for our podcasts, is actually of this type. We use the Blog Engine CMS, and we don't really care about programming and whatnot, because all we're concerned about is getting our content out there, you know, in each episode that we put out.
And the third, the third style of website that you want to create is a website that has a database on it, okay, associated with it. And this would be a website that connects to a full-blown SQL Server or a MySQL database. So these are the kind of, you know, three ways that you can create these websites. Now, Kale, what exactly is going on under the covers here with Windows Azure websites?
Yeah, great question. I always like digging into the details to find out how these things actually work. And the Azure website model is kind of unique when you compare it to something like our platform as a service. Truth be told, it's actually running on top of PaaS and abstracting some of that away from the end user. So I'll get into some of the details of how these things actually work. But first, I wanted to touch on one little thing about the different modes that we can run these websites in. I think you alluded to this earlier. We have three modes of operation that we can run these sites in. They're called free, shared, and standard. And you can adjust these once you deploy your website by going to the Scale tab. So in these three different modes, we have options that vary based on which mode you're in. Obviously, when you're in the free mode, there's no cost, obviously, since it's called free. You are limited by how many sites you can set up, and it's based on your plan. So whatever type of plan, if you come in with an MSDN or if you came in with one of our free trials, it varies how many websites. It's typically around 10 that you can set up free. You can't, when you're running in a free mode, you can't use vanity DNS names. So you could, in your DNS server, if you're hosting your own DNS, change the name to point to the website .net that Azure provisions, but the URL is going to show that to the end user when you're in the free mode. So the other thing with free mode, and also with the shared mode, which is one step up, is it uses multi-tenant mode, which basically means you have non-dedicated VMs that you're using behind the scenes. So when it's being provisioned, there might be, you know, 50 or 100 websites being deployed to the same VM that you're running on. So along with that, we have things like quotas, pretty strict quotas, in fact, on CPU, memory, and network that these free and shared versions of the websites can run under. Now, shared mode has a little less stringent. It's a little less stringent on the resources, but it has a lower SLA as opposed to the standard model, which is our Cadillac. That's the top end, dedicated VMs that are dedicated to your website. So if you have something that's fairly high volume and you're worried about these quotas interfering with maybe your customers using your site, the standard model is the way to go. I mentioned the pricing on the free model is free. For the shared model, it's $10 a month, but then you also pay for egress and storage. Again, it's only egress out, not in. And then the pricing for the standard comes in a couple different flavors. We have the small, medium, and large, which are 75, 150, and 300 at the moment. And they have varying amounts of CPU and memory. You can check that out on the Azure website if you have any questions about what exactly is contained in small, medium, or large, along with the SLAs that go along with that and the cost. The cost calculator we mentioned in a past broadcast is another thing they can use to figure out how much it's going to cost you to run this.
Mm-hmm.
And the shared and the standard features can scale out to multiple instances in order to meet your demands, and they also include a 20-meg database as part of it. So that's
wow,
nice.
Wow, that really sounds great, Kale. Thanks for that little detail on how this what's going on under the covers here. But you know, I'm just curious, how does this actually work? So that, you know, we can all share all these resources on Windows Azure, all these websites can share the resources. What exactly happens under the covers there?
Yeah, I think this is the thing that interests me the most when I first started learning about these things. And like I said, it varies. It's much different from the way a PaaS application is deployed. So when you deploy your application using this feature, the Windows Azure websites, What happens is your application gets packaged up and it gets stored in a blob, in our blob, you know, that we talked about with our storage engine. So there's three components that make up how this website works behind the scenes inside Windows Azure. There's a stateless worker role, which is a PaaS model worker role that's running there. We have the blobs for our storage. That's where we're going to store all the data about your application, all your code, all your HTML, CSS, whatnot. And then there's a relational database behind the scenes that we call a runtime database that will be used, and I'll tell you what that means here in a second. So once you go through, as Sajid mentioned, you can go up there and do a quick create, or you can bring your own code, or use one of our templates. What's actually happening is it sets this up. It stores that data up there in the blob. The first time a client makes a request to your website, to the URL, what's going to happen is the request is going to come into Azure. It's going to hit the load balancer in Windows Azure. As part of that, we're using the application request routing, the ARR function in IIS. And what that's going to do for us is allow it to go, the IIS to actually go to the data, to a database, the runtime database, and say, hey, I got this request for this URL. Do you know anything about it? What that's going to do then, the database is going to say, yeah, I know what the guy is. Here's his config. He's running in a standard mode, which means he has a dedicated VM. So go to this web server over here, and his application is deployed over there, and it will go fire it up if it isn't running and return the request to the end user. If you're running in a free or shared mode where it's multi-tenant, so let's say you deploy your application, but nobody uses it for a few days, and then somebody makes a request to it. Same thing's going to happen. The request is going to come in. It's going to hit ARR, and the router is going to say, okay, I don't have this deployed anywhere, and he's running in free mode, so I can just grab something out of the pool. So it will go grab something from its pool internally and go deploy your application there. Once it's deployed, it will fire it up, and it will go ahead and make the request to that web server, and it will return the request back to your client. So what this means to the end user is, or to your clients, is the first request, whenever this thing is cold, and when I say cold, it means it hasn't been a request for quite some time, it has to actually fire it up. So what you get is kind of the same thing that we used to have with ASP.NET, where when we didn't pre-compile our websites, the first time someone hits it, there was a compilation that happened, so there was a little bit of lag on the first request. Something similar is happening here. The only other piece that's part of that is this special storage controller, which handles all the SQL Server information. So if your website is actually using SQL Server or MySQL, there's a special storage controller that's handling how to route those requests to get it to the right database. And that's basically how it works underneath the covers.
Great. So, you know, I guess the next logical thing that one would think about is, all right, you know, I have an app that I've downloaded from the Azure websites. I have it on my computer in Visual Studio, and I want to know how I am going to make changes and reapply those changes back into Azure websites. All right. And there is a couple of ways that are supported. The first one is the one that most developers or anyone that has done any Visual Studio development with websites would know, is you can publish directly from Visual Studio to a web server. And, of course, you know, the Windows Azure websites is nothing but another web server, so you can publish it directly from Visual Studio. You don't even have to, you know, fuss around with the various parameters and stuff like that, because if you walk up to the Azure portal, it is a link over there where you can download the published profile, and you could download that to your computer, and then Visual Studio can import it. And now, once you're done making your changes to your website and you're ready to push it up into Azure, all you have to do is to publish it using that profile, and it does all the work for you. The other way that is supported now is publishing via the TFS in the cloud. If you use source control, you could use the cloud-based source control that is offered by Microsoft. And if you have an MSDN account, I believe you get up to 5 projects free with that. That thing works really nicely with the Windows Azure websites. The way it works is you test your code locally, and once you're happy that it's working, you check it into the cloud TFS. And then you kick off a build. And when you do that, when you kick off the build, it actually connects with the build controller in TFS in the cloud, will talk to the Azure websites framework, and will tell it that, you know, there's a package over here that's ready for deployment. And that package then gets deployed into Windows Azure websites directly. So that's another way of deploying this into Azure via TFS. Now, the one thing point I'll make over here is that you have to remember that there is no staging environment when it comes to Windows Azure websites. When you deploy these apps, they go into production directly. So please be sure you test them well on your workstation, on your laptop, before you decide to hit the publish button.
Yeah, this is great, Sujit. One other thing I wanted to mention, along with these deployment methods, there's one other method that I've seen our customers kind of gravitating toward, especially people that have used things like Rackspace or GoDaddy or something. Mm-hmm. We have the tool called the Web Matrix, and what that allows you to do is it's pretty much a GUI to allow you to drag and drop changes up there, too, and publish them. Behind the scenes, it's doing the same stuff that you're talking about, the web deploy up to the Windows Azure. But it's a great on-ramp for people that are used to those GUI-type tools to just drag and drop things onto their website.
Indeed. Yes, thanks for bringing that up, Kale. Yes, I've used WebMetrix for some smaller websites. If you like the Razor syntax, which WebMetrix uses, you'll like using that tool. It does do exactly what Kale just said. Well, so we're coming to the end of our podcast, the third episode that we have, and I want to just end up by providing a tip and a couple of general updates related to Windows Azure. So the one tip is related to the Azure Store tables, which we discussed last week, Kale. One of the things that when you deal with tables containing a lot of data is you sometimes want to make sure that you can back up that data, and maybe later if you accidentally delete it up in Azure, you can restore it. So one way to do that is to use the Windows Azure Storage Explorer tool, which we did mention in our last episode. And in that tool, there is an upload-download facility for the table. So you select your table, and you can just download it in a number of formats. And eventually, when you feel like you need to put it back up there and restore it, you upload it back, and it will then upload it back into that table. So that's just a nice way to do backup and restore your Azure tables if you feel they've got a lot of information over there that you just cannot afford to lose. The one update that came out, a big update, Kale, you might have heard this, is HD Insight, which is our Hadoop distribution in the cloud, was generally made available this past week. It was in preview prior to that, and I think they've ironed out all the bugs, and it's now available for general distribution. What this means is that if you have a very data-intensive job in the sense that you have to process a lot of data, and you can take advantage of doing that in a distributed fashion, you could leverage the Hadoop framework, which is built into Windows Azure. And the nice thing about doing it in the cloud is you only pay for what you use. So let's say you have to run a job at the end of the month or the end of the week, and you have all this data. I'm talking of, you know, like maybe a petabyte of data, if not less than that. You can just provision a whole bunch of nodes and instances in HD Insight to do that processing at the end of the week or month, and only pay for what you use. So this is something that you definitely want to take a look at the Azure website, windowsazure.com.
Yeah, it's definitely ideal for the type of workloads. I mean, that kind of a workload fits Windows Azure perfectly because it's the type of work where you don't want to have a bunch of machines sitting around idle and then all of a sudden kick off a big job and you need 100 of them and then have 100 of them sitting idle again. It scales really well, and it's a perfect workload for Windows Azure.
Exactly, yeah. And then, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, Windows Azure in these three episodes now. But, you know, if you feel like you want to get kind of a real-world view into how people are actually deploying Azure in companies, there is the Azure user group in Belgium. Their website is azug.be. The link will be in the show notes. They've got a bunch of real-world architecture videos, and I encourage you guys to take a look at that. They're very, you know, very strong user group out there in Belgium. So that'll be in the show notes, and Well, Cale, I believe that's a wrap for us. Thanks again for all those insights into Azure websites. And we'll see you guys next week.
Thanks again, Sujeet. See you guys later.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use the comments section of the website at easypodcast.azurewebsites.net. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.